9:18 on the Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. Mark Howard, along with Kevin Ingram, Blaine off this week, our producer Jonathan Schaefer, and let's bring in Andy Staples, who of course covers college football superbly for The Athletic. Andy, good morning.
Good morning. I may need to recruit you guys to help with my latest project. I am doing a podcast tomorrow on memories of SEC Media Days, and I'm trying to find the audio of then Vanderbilt interim coach Robbie Caldwell in the big room in 2010 when he spent several minutes talking about the fine art of turkey insemination.
I remember that. I remember Phil Fulmer versus the Alabama fans. A lot of great memories.
Well, the year that Fulmer showed up by a teleconference, where it was basically one of those big old teleconference things that people have in their offices. They put on a desk in the front of the room, and everybody was, you had all the photographers taking pictures of it like it was going to smile or something. But that was the same year that Nick Saban's dog showed up.
Yeah, that's right. All right, talking about the SEC, are they delaying the inevitable? What was your takeaway from their meeting yesterday in Birmingham?
Just that they were going to stay on the same timeline they've been on the whole time, and they weren't going to let some other conference's decision push them into a decision that they weren't ready to make. I mean, if you talk to Greg Sankey going back to April, he said they're going to take as long as they can to make any decisions. So they really don't have to make any decisions until the end of this month, so they're not going to. I don't know that it necessarily changes what the decision is going to be. If they made it today versus if they make it in 2 weeks, I'm not sure it's a different decision. But I don't blame them for wanting to have as much time as possible.
How about too, Sankey not really mincing words, criticizing, people for not wearing masks and, putting at least some of these, rising COVID numbers, on those who are not, being safe.
Well, I mean, they've been saying for months that it will help. And whether it will or not, you've got to try something. I mean, if it doesn't, if everybody does it and it's proven not to work, then okay, fine, do something else. But if everybody does it and it works, great. Maybe there's still a chance to play some football. Because the thing is, like, the Big Ten and the Pac-12, they got rid of non-conference games. But if the numbers dip, they still have a window to play in the fall as well. And it's part of the reason why they got rid of non-conference games, because it gives them more flexibility if they want to start later or if they need to move some stuff around. So why not give it a shot? What's the harm in it?
If everybody goes with just conference games, Andy, do you see each conference trying to get to 9 or 10 games?
I would think so. The thing that I'm interested in, because you notice the ACC said the same thing the SEC did, and we haven't heard anything from the Big 12. I wonder if those three might work together to do something a little bit different. But especially the ACC and the SEC, because they've got those four rivalry games at the end of the season. Perhaps they do something to try to keep those games played. Because, think about it. If you're sending Georgia to play Georgia Tech, I can't remember who the home team is this year, but if you're sending one to play the other, they're traveling 46 miles. If you sent Georgia to Arkansas, you'd be making them go a lot further and possibly, if the issue is safety, causing a bigger issue. So I do think you may see those two leagues work together to try to keep those games happening. Because if Florida's going to play football and Florida State's going to play football, then they may as well play each other. They're only 2 hours apart. And the ACC and the SEC's testing protocols are not going to be very different.
You brought up a lot of very interesting scenarios that could occur if they do go to just conference games, or if the schedule gets pushed back enough. And that is some of the top NFL prospects bailing. What about that?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think if the season moves to the spring, I think anybody who's a lock first round draft pick, or maybe even a lock second round draft pick, they're probably not playing. The question is, if you have an abbreviated season in the fall, which, look, that doesn't look very likely right now, but the numbers might change over the next few weeks. Maybe it gets better and maybe they do get to play in the fall. If you play an abbreviated season, I think there's a chance you still lose some of those top prospects. Now, I don't think it's a lot of players. I don't think it's more than maybe 20 if you're playing in the fall, because you got to remember, most players can still make more money by playing well. Now, by putting fresh tape out there, by moving themselves up in the draft. And I think I was talking to somebody, and we were trying to talk about different players who might be incentivized to do that. But one player whose name came up was Dylan Moses at Alabama. And Dylan Moses came back to Alabama to show he's healthy and that he can move after the injury. And I would think it would behoove him to play. I mean, he came back, presumably, to raise his draft stock, not just because he wanted to hang out in Tuscaloosa for another year. So my guess is a person like that would still want to play because there's a financial incentive to play. Now, if you're Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields or Penei Sewell at Oregon, I'm not sure there is a financial incentive to play. You're going to be drafted, you know, in the top five whether you play this year or not. But for almost everybody else, you can still make some money. So I don't think it would be as drastic as everybody thinks. Now, it would change the dynamics of things. I mean, think about it. If you're Michigan and one or two or three of Ohio State's best players aren't playing, well, suddenly that closes the talent gap between you two quite a bit. So that would make things interesting. If you're Clemson and Trevor Lawrence doesn't come back, now you've got DJ Uiagalelei, who is a major prospect, you know, is the type of guy who, if he was not at Clemson, might be a person who could start as a true freshman anyway. So, I mean, would that change that much for Clemson? They'd probably still be really good. But if you lost, let's say you lost Lawrence and Travis Etienne, that's a little bit different dynamic.
Where does this leave the group of five if they lose most of their games against the Power Five conference teams?
It's going to be tough. And the problem is, you know, I if they play in the fall, I have a hard time seeing them playing with fans. I just it's hard to imagine state governments being okay with that in most states. In the spring, I could see a little more chance of maybe playing with fans, which I think would probably benefit the Group 5 a little bit because they don't have the big TV deals. They do rely a little more on gate to basically keep themselves afloat. The Power Five schools obviously would lose a ton of money if they can't play with fans, but they still would get a ton of money in TV money, so they can work with that a little more. The Group of Five, I feel like they need the TV or the in-person money a little bit more than the Power Five does. But at this point, I'm not sure there's a real good outcome for the Group of Five schools because, you know, they're already running on pretty tight budgets. They take a lot of money from the university side. A lot of those are supported by student fees, which are basically, you know, an activity fee that's tacked on per credit hour to your tuition. And if students aren't on campus, it's awfully hard to charge them a student activity fee when there's no activities for them to actually enjoy. So that's an issue if you're a Group 5 school right now.
I am back. We had a little power outage here at the home office. We're visiting with Andy Staples of The Athletic, talking college football with Andy. Always love that. You know, as far as coaches getting mulligans for this season, how many guys do you think we're talking about?
Ooh, that's an interesting one because I was talking about this the other day with somebody. You know, how ticked off do you have to be to fire your coach now? And then, you know, we were talking about what if the season's in the spring and then you got to turn around in 3 months and play another season? Yeah, that would seem awfully hard to fire a coach. But then somebody brought up the point to me that if you did it that way, then at least the recruits would all be signed and you wouldn't have to do it in the middle of recruiting. So maybe that would inspire more firings. But I think you're going to have to be quite a bit worse than you would have been to get fired this year because it's such an odd situation. There's so many different variables at play here. I think places like USC where, you know, they were kind of either do it now or don't with Clay Helton. Maybe they still do something if it doesn't work out the way they want it to. But I think you'd have to be pretty abysmal to get yourself fired this year?
One coach that did was not getting fired or going anywhere. It was Ed Ogeron after leading LSU to the national championship. I was actually watching some of the SEC title game yesterday between LSU and Georgia. We were discussing this a little, Andy. What do you feel like that LSU team ranks historically? Is you know, kind of get a little time to go back and look at it. With that offense, it was basically impossible to slow down.
Yes, and think about that SEC championship game, because that was statistically the best defense in the SEC. That Georgia defense was really good all year. And they played against some good offenses and shut them down. And LSU basically toyed with them for an hour. And I just don't know. I don't know that we've seen an offense like that. And you can say it's recency bias, but my guess is if we get 15, 20 years from now, we're still going to say, I don't know that we've seen an offense like that, because you know, we've had a solid 15 years of the up-tempo spread and you know, the numbers kind of being different than they were in the 80s and the 90s. But this was something different. This was something where it did not matter what the defense did, the offense had an answer for it. And whether that was Joe Brady, Joe Burrow, combination of Brady and Ensminger and Burrow, I don't know. But it worked perfectly. And there was no one that could stop it. Auburn, I guess, came the closest. But nobody got that close.
And as for, you know, going back to the current situation, as far as a playoff, how might those things be affected, especially if you go to the spring? Is there a chance we could see an expanded play, you know, add some extra teams just for this year if it's a conference-only situation? I mean, what are the different variables there for the postseason?
I think everything's up in the air. And, you know, I don't know that the people running the playoff right now would want to alter it, but I also think they may not have a choice. And look, you know, I'd be frustrated if I'm the Pac-12 going into this season, where let's say Oregon's really good, but they only play a Pac-12 schedule, and so everybody's like, well, we thought the Pac-12 stunk the last 2 years, so you know they must stink this year too. Well, we don't know that if they can't play anybody else. So that's the part where I say. If you're in a situation where most everybody's playing conference only, why not tweak the rules a little bit this year? Especially if everybody's playing fewer games, why not add another round? Just do the five Power Five conference champs, the highest ranked Group of Five champs, put those in, and then two wild cards. Pick the next two best that you think. And obviously, there's no real criteria for it, because there's no data points for them playing any other conferences, but do it that way. And then just see how it goes, because that's what you're going to be pressured to do when this TV contract ends anyway. So see if it works. If everybody loves it, you may want to switch to it now.
Oh, and you guys may have talked about this before I came back, you know, when the power was off. How might the schedule be changed, whether you're talking about the Big Ten or Pac-12, or you know, if the SEC and ACC and Big 12 follow suit? How might their schedules be changed to allow for more games, or at least some flexibility if needed? When you look at the SEC usually playing an 8-game schedule and so forth.
The Big Ten folks said that they're going to meet this week and actually hammer out what the schedule might look like. And I thought it was interesting that Gene Smith, the Ohio State athletic director, said last week that the schedule might actually kind of be a living thing. Like, they may schedule the first, you know, half or a little less than the first half a game, and then just sort of leave it open to kind of match things up as they go, in case you had teams that you had to knock out because of too many positive tests, or if there were other issues along the way. And that way you would have as many people playing as they could at a time. Now, this is obviously still a plan for the fall. We'll see if they can actually do that. But I think that's an interesting concept, and I would imagine that that's what most leagues would try to do if they're trying to get it in the fall, is leave themselves as much flexibility as humanly possible, because that would be the only way, I think, to get any played in the fall.
Andy Staples is our guest from The Athletic. Mark, got one more?
Yeah, Andy, I got to ask you about your menu, your journey, your food journey through America. Is that your War and Peace? Because, I mean, that's a long list, pal.
That's my magnum opus. That's 23,000 words. But speaking of living documents, like the potential Big Ten football schedule, we're going to keep adding to it. I just, you know, hopefully this ends soon and I can get back on the road and go find more good places. And I'm just going to keep adding to it as it goes. If you subscribe to The Athletic, you can read that story. It was 300 places that I've been throughout my travels as a sports writer that I love, that I recommend, and I've eaten at all of them. I wasn't one of those where I read, oh, this place is supposed to be good. No, I've eaten it all. And I want to keep adding to it. And so we've got an interactive Google map on there where you can click it and on your phone, it'll show you what the closest ones to you are. So listen, I'm ready. It's 300 right now. I want this thing to be 500, 600, 1,000. We're going to make it happen.
Are you willing to adjust the hours on your intermittent fasting to allow for the hours of operation for these restaurants?
You can move the window. At this point, I'm allowed to eat for 8 hours a day. And, yeah, you can move the window. I mean, if it's going to be like a fancy steakhouse or something that you want to do at night, then I'll move the window and eat from like 2 to 10 instead of 11 to 7. But most of these meals are going to be lunches. I'm not going to lie to you guys. And that's the way it should be. You have the big lunch, and then you got some time to move around and work some of that off.
You still got some day left. Well, Andy, we always enjoy our time with you. Thanks, as always. We'll catch up with you again soon.
All right. See you guys.
All right. Take it easy. From The Athletic, that is Andy Staples. He writes about football. He writes about food. He's great at both.
That list is prolific.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to reading a little more of that because he does know all the spots. I mean, if you follow Andy on Twitter or read, you know, what he writes with The Athletic, he's always right on top of everything when it comes to places to eat around the country, you know, in his travels covering college football.
I thought the most interesting thing that he had to say was that there might be some SEC-ACC games and that the schedule might be ever-changing. So some glimpses of hope if you're a college football fan.
To me, some of those things would make sense when you talk about SEC-ACC matchups because, you know, a couple of the rivalry, you know, at least three that I can think of off the top of my head, rivalry games for SEC teams outside of the conference that involve those teams. I mean, you think about South Carolina-Clemson, you got Georgia-Georgia Tech, Kentucky-Louisville. I mean, I'm sure you can come up with some more, but I think that that's interesting that he said that.
Well, he did say, too, that the cancellations by the Big Ten and the Pac-12 had more to do with the calendar than it did geography.
So, well, Andy's are always right on top of it. 9:36 a time, 104.5 the Zone. This is the Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. Apologies for the power outage. You never know when stuff like that might hit. I'm sitting here and all of a sudden everything goes dark and I'm like, great. Well, this is going to be a shutdown here for a couple minutes. But back up and rolling. Preds back on the ice. Good to see that at Bridgestone yesterday. And also an interesting ownership situation with a Major League Baseball team we'll talk about when we come back on 104.5 The Zone.